to that further. I also need to like walk around. It's too far away. My computer's up here. Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you. Really, no offense. All right, Cooper, I didn't know you were here.
Every once in a while, I get a while.
He just likes to follow me around.
Okay, good evening to everybody. Thank you for coming. The idea of an ear has actually appeared in the news. I don't know if anybody gets the Jewish Week from New York, but it's actually on the cover page last week. Had a story about how in the Hamptons, there's a big issue right now that the Hampton Synagogue wants to put up an ear to facilitate those people that want to get back and forth to shul. And there's a major movement against it, both Jewish and non-Jewish, for various reasons. So I don't want to get into that. I want to just make sure that we're educated into what exactly it is, what would possibly be a complaint, although that probably wouldn't be too many, but what would possibly be a complaint. And I have a little virtual Erev tour of our area Erev. A couple areas you could drive around and... what's that string doing up going across Lancaster Avenue? So I figured I'd show a couple of pictures, things that maybe you never noticed before, and now you can drive around and say, hey, that's our Erev, that's our pole, that's our wire going across the street that's getting knocked over and things like that. All right, so let's begin. I also kind of want to take as a premise for tonight, otherwise that would be a whole class amongst itself, about the laws of Shabbos. I mean, the laws of Shabbos are a very complicated thing. Why we keep, etc., is really a long story to do, and really a separate class. Maybe we could do that another time. But I kind of want to take as a premise tonight that there is such a thing as the laws of Shabbos, that they're one of the 39 malachos, one of the 39 areas that are of prohibited activities on Shabbos, is to carry from a private domain to a public domain, as well as in a public domain. And there are technical aspects to the way an Eruv is built that are grounded in the Torah Shebaal Peh, grounded in oral tradition, and which we'll talk about a little bit tonight. And that's kind of the premise I want to go with. So if we could agree on that premise, so then we'll continue. So what is the what is the source of the 39? This is just a little bit of background. What is the source for the 39? There's 39 that prohibited activities that are detailed in the Mishnah and Shabbos. And what are they based on? So the Gemara tells us, the Talmud tells us in Shabbos, that they're based on all activities having to do with the construction of the Mishkan. Either the construction of the tabernacles that took place that was in the desert, or the activities that were going on during the course of the use of the tabernacles in the desert. That's a question that the Talmud deals with. But what would be an activity? So I understand. So they would slaughter animals. So therefore, slaughtering is a prohibited activity on Shabbos. So they would cook, or they would bake in order to either make the dyes for the curtains, or they would cook in order to bring the animals as sacrifices. So those are activities that would be included in the 39. Where does carrying fit in there? Where would carrying in public domain have anything to do with the activities that take place in the tabernacles? So, anybody, any guess? That's actually our first source. The Talmud and Shabbos tells us on the page, again, they stand upon regarding what we learned. The prince, also, if anybody's ever interested, the entire Sansino Talmud is available online in English. You can, that's where this kind of pays from. So it's a little bit of an old translation. So I don't generally speak with the words "hence ye must not so," but that's what was available online, and that's what we're using. So there are people that were sitting and they asked regarding what we learned. The principal categories of labor are 40 less 1, meaning there are 39. Why is it 40 minus 1? Is a good question. To what do they correspond? So said Rabbi Hanina ben Chama to them, to the forms of labor that took place in the Mishkan, a form of labor in the tabernacle. So it was taught, so we skip a little bit in the Talmud, and then it writes, it was taught as the opinion that corresponds to the forms of labor in the tabernacles, for it was taught. Liability is incurred only for work of which the same was performed up to the tabernacle. I mean, there's only a problem of malacha on Shabbos. The prohibitions of work on Shabbos are only things that would be comparable to things in the Mishkan. They sowed, hence we are not allowed to sow. I mean, they planted for things that were used in the Mishkan, so therefore we're not to do that on Shabbos. They reaped, I mean, they gathered things. They gathered things in from the field in order to create things in the Mishkan. So therefore, we're not allowed to do it. And then finally, they lifted up the boards from the ground to the wagon. Hence, we must not carry in the public to the private domain. Meaning, in order to construct and deconstruct the temple, the Mishkan, so they had things that were on. They were on carts, and then they took them off the carts, that was a private domain, and they took them off the carts and put them and built and constructed them in the middle of the camp, which was a public domain. And they moved things around. That was also activity that took place in the public domain. And when they deconstructed the tabernacles, which is also an essential thing to do, but they put it up in the next place that the Israelites traveled. So they took things from a public domain and put it in a private domain. So that is the source of the of use of carrying in the tabernacles, and that's what we sort of pattern our malacha after, pattern our laws on Shabbos after. So, okay, that's issue number one. Issue number one of the actual the issue of carrying from a public to a private domain and vice versa, so that's patterned after something that was done in the tabernacles. So the Talmud continues. There's a Talmud, a passage in Tractate Erevin that talks about, well, one second, there's parts about our use of Erev that we do today that is no source in the tabernacles. So our construction of an Erev, so that maybe will pattern after. I mean, our construction that we create is that we create a private domain such that the entire area is a private domain. And what that construction is, we'll get to shortly. But there's another aspect of Erevin that's very important, and most people don't even know about this. Most people don't even know what you're talking about if you mention it to them. And that's what we call the actual Erev Chatzeres, the action of the Erev. What does it mean, the action of the Erev? So the Erev literally means to join together. Right, so how do we physically join together? So we do two things. Number one is we build or use barriers that are already existent in the area. That's the first thing that we do. And the second thing how do we merge people together? So the Talmud tells us that this goes back all the way to the days of Solomon. That King Solomon enacted the following idea. That he said, in order to really bind people together, so it's not just enough for them to be living in proximity to one another. That's not enough. What we have to do is create what we call an Erev, which consists of an article of food that everybody would be able to participate in. So what we do is one person takes something, puts it in somebody else's house, right? Thereby saying, my food's in your house. And everybody's really allowed to use that food. And it's okay. Whoever wants to go and use it is permitted and can go ahead and gazunta hate, everything would be fine. And that, according to that, Solomon said, that's the way we're going to actually merge everybody together. In order to build the community, it's not just enough for us to be living together. We actually have to do something concrete to say that we're one. And technically, everybody is invited to eat that, to eat from that air. So we actually have one in our shul, in our chapel, we have in the corner is a box of matzahs. Matzahs are very convenient because matzahs, as well know, last a very long time. So we take a box of matzahs. The custom is to do this on Erev Pesach. So every Erev Pesach, you take a box of matzahs, and we say, this year is our Erev Chatzeros that we're going to use. Whoever wants to can come and eat from this Erev whenever they want. And you put it in a public place, so we have it marked in our chapel, the box of matzahs that has marked on it, Erev Matzah. And if anybody's ever hungry on Shabbos, you're all welcome to come to our shul. And you'll know where to find it now. It's in the chapel. You can all go have some matzah. It's only been, 10 months now? Still fresh? You're all welcome to come. Yes?
Is that related to when you set it for Yom Tov and you have to then have a cooked food?
Right. So the term Erev means to merge here. So Erev is used in many different ways. So one is what you're talking about, what you call an Erev Tavshilin, in order to cook from Shabbos to Yom Tov. So we join them. One food, right? There's only one food. The Yontif Shabbos thing next year. What? Right, for Yontif we do the second food. We have a third type of Erev that we use. Anybody know that? That's for a chocolate bar. It doesn't have to be the Erev, but if anybody wants a chocolate bar, anybody? The third one? The third one? So we have something called a Tchum Shabbos. It's also one of the prohibitions on Shabbos is to walk out in the middle of nowhere for 2,000 amos. So around here, it's hard to get out of the city. Go all the way to Washington, D.C. and be considered in a city. But I was in Phoenix, a rabbi in Phoenix for a couple of years, so there, you're driving, you're in the middle of a city, you're in the middle of developments that are mostly underwater and sold by the bank, whatever, and as soon as you exit the city, so you're in the middle, you're in wilderness already. So to walk 2,000 cubits, about 3,000 feet in wilderness, so that we don't want people to do on Shabbos. Let's say you gotta go. I'm not sure where you got to go, but for some reason you got to walk. This happens in the mountains sometimes. People have bungalows or things like that, so this issue exists up there. So you could set up, you could do the same thing. You could do an Erev Tchumim, you could put food out 1,999 amos outside of the city, and that extends it another 2 days. You're saying, that's my spot. I mean, I'm here, but my spot is over there, and that extends it a little bit. So it's the same use of the word Erev. You're merging a couple things together, adding them to things that we could do. So the Talmud in Erevin has a it makes an interesting line here. We can just to think about it a little bit. I don't want to focus on it too much, but Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the second source, B'shash etikin Shlomo Erevin v'netilas yadayim. Shlomo established the laws of Erev. Shlomo also established the laws of netilas yadayim, the laws of washing for bread. So that was actually established by Shlomo. It's not found in the Torah. There's hints of it found in the Torah, but it's not found in the Torah. That was established by King Solomon. So Yatzta Baskol, a heavenly voice, came out and said, "Bini im chacham libcha yismach libi gam ani." He said, "My son, if your heart is wise, my heart will be glad." God is saying, since you're so wise, I'm very glad, I'm very happy. And then also, Chacham b'ni v'sameach libi v'ashiv achar pi davar. My son, be wise and make my heart glad that I may answer him that taunted me. So these two verses are kind of God's expression of, wow, Shlomo, I granted you so much wisdom, and I see you're doing very good things with it. Your establishment of these laws of Erev and the laws of Netilas Yadayim, I see you're using your wisdom in a very good way. So what does God mean by this? So, yeah?
Well, I think there's something up, but I think what he's saying is that although it's not explicitly ordained in the Torah, he intuited somehow, he heard about Kolen and was able to figure out that this was an extension of the laws of Shabbos,
right,
and that this would make God happy.
Right.
Or that he didn't know
there
would make God happy.
Right. Yeshikoa. Good job. Good job on what you did. Why specifically this? So of course, Shlomo was able to intuit a way of using the Torah for enhancing society. So I think this... Do you want to add something else?
I was going to ask a question, though.
Okay.
In a way, the prohibition against sharing from domain to domain is in the 39 Malachot. Why is it so important to go to such lengths to circumvent what is supposed to be one of the 39 Malachot? In other words,
you mean an ideal world?
Well, you know, you're not supposed to carry from domain to domain.
Right.
And now we're going to try and figure out a way to circumvent. I understand for Chatzibot.
Right.
I can understand locally. But why within the Tum Shabbat, why within the public domain, is it important to circumvent the law which says what you shouldn't be doing?
Right. Meaning in an ideal world, if I take a look at Remington Road, right? And we're not supposed to be carrying on Remington Road.
Right.
So what gives us the right to say, oh, we're going to do this trick, quote unquote, we're going to construct these wires and these little things
all
over the place?
Well, I understand where the point comes from. I understand if you want to know why that's almost like God is so happy. We're circumventing what God himself said we should be doing.
Right.
Because in
the
in
some place
was
the
law,
and we are smart enough in order.
Well, let me give
a better. So So the truth is, maybe at the end, I put a little bit of a passage here from Rav Soloveitchik in the Halachic Man, where he talks. Well, let's save that. Let's table that parking lot. We'll put that up there. Okay. So that is what God was saying to Solomon. You figured this out, right? It's a good idea. And not only have you've now taken the laws of care, the prohibition of carrying out of the realm of, I think there's a little bit more to this, out of the realm of a technical issue of carrying here or there, whether are you allowed to carry here, not allowed to carry here, and you've actually enhanced it, you've actually used it as a way of community building. You have now added something in, the idea of Eruv Chatzeros, the idea that people are now going to be transferring back and forth, people will assume usage of other people's food, so to speak, which is, you don't abuse that privilege, but to an extent, that's what we're saying. We're saying you have now enhanced community by organizing the laws of Eruvin. Let's maybe pass on that on the next resources. Let's on the interest of some time here, and let's move along to the Gemara in Eruvin. So, whose responsibility is it to put up an Eruv? Who's supposed to be in charge? So there's actually a Talmud, a very interesting Talmud statement in the Talmud that Amar Le Rabba Bar of Chanan Labai. Rabba was walking around. He mentioned to Abaye, Mevoa de Ispe Trey Gavi Rabrave Krabanan Loli Havi Be Lo Eruv Velo Shituf. He says to him, Abaye, you live in the town with, I think, Rabba. Rabba was saying to Abaye and Rabba, said, you have such two great men like you, meaning you have two big Talmidei Chacham and two important sages, two very famous people. Why is it that there is no Eruv in your town? Like, what happened? Like, well, why do you not bother ever to put up an Eruv? So he answers back, Amrlei my Navid, what are we supposed to do? Mar lav arach. I mean, Rava, he's a very important person, and we're not going to bother him with doing it. And Anna taridna begirsai inu lo mishkechei. He says, I'm very busy with my studies. I'm too busy to put it together. And other people in the town don't really care. I mean, the rest of the people aren't so interested in working on Eir. Now, what the sages interpret from this statement in the Talmud is that he's being apologetic. I mean, really, he is supposed to be in charge. Really, the Rabbanim, the rabbis, are supposed to be in charge of making sure that there's an Eruv up. He's giving an excuse, saying, what can I do? Nebuch, I got too many other things that I got to be worried about. I haven't been able to gather it together. I haven't been able to figure out a map. I haven't been able to hire the electrical companies to put things up. I haven't been able to raise the money. I haven't been able to do that. But really, it is his responsibility. He's to say, I'm not up to that yet. But where it is that this statement of the Talmud is kind of placing the responsibility of this kind of things on the rabbis of the town, that they're responsible to ensure that there's an Eruv up. So much so, you want to raise a question?
I have a question.
I don't know what your question is, though.
I'm just wondering what
a shituf is. A partnership. To join everybody together, yeah, the partnership. So much so that the Rush, writing in the 13th century, in either in Germany, he's very interesting. He moved from Germany all the way to Spain. Probably he was the Rav in Spain for many years in Toledo, in Spain, and he was writing answers to all over the place. So much so that the Rush actually harasses somebody for not putting up an Eruv in his town. That somebody wrote to the Rush. You can see the question here. Someone wrote to him, I don't think that we should be putting up an Eruv because of the following halachic reasons. And he said to the Rush a couple of halachic reasons why we are not supposed to do so. And the Rav wrote back to him, how dare you do that? I mean, very nice that you want to be stringent, but what about the rest of your town? I've already written to you that I think it's permissible, and it's the custom in the entire diaspora that towns all over the place are putting these up. Yes, it is true that the general Erevin that we have in towns like ours, like our, is founded on a couple of various leniencies that appear in halacha. That is true. And the Rush, this argument has been going back 800, 900 years, right? The Rush was saying, yes, it is true that we have some leniencies, but I already told you that it's okay. I already told you that this is the custom, this is what the minhag is in our country, that we do construct these Erevin. And how dare you, Rabbi, how dare you stand in the way of your town putting up an Erevin? He even writes at the end here pretty serious words. He says, therefore I adjure you that within 2 weeks of getting this letter that you get started on this, and if not, I'm going to put you in Chayrim. And not only that, but if the Sanhedrin would exist today, that's what he writes, the Sanhedrin would exist, you would be put to death. Now what does he mean you would be put to death for that? So because by a rug, what? I don't think that's what the Rush meant, but let me just explain what he meant. That there is a concept in that to violate the words of the Rabban, the rabbis have some serious power. If somebody says that the words of the rabbi, they have no meaning to me, or it doesn't interest me, and I'm going to blatantly violate them, so the Sanhedrin has the right to technically to kill him. I'm not sure they ever did, but technically they could bring out some pretty harsh punishments on him. So Rush is saying to him, as a community of rabbis, meaning of the world full of rabbis, we have assumed that this is something that should be done. And we have something that's been encouraged for people to do in their towns. In a way, in those days, it was a necessity to have on Shabbos. Otherwise, things would be a lot more difficult to manage. So he's saying, well, you have to do it. I mean, and if you don't, if you say that, well, I know better, then you're going against the community of rabbis. And that itself is a significant problem. The Rush, and I don't know what the end of the story is. That's really the problem with responsive literature. Like, you don't know. You get all these like threats, and it's like, well, what happened? What happened afterwards? Did he actually? Right. Okay, but you see the seriousness that there's a responsibility to do this. So that's all really by way of introduction. In order to get, and now I want to just do a couple of the plain detail, the plain rules of how it's constructed. We'll have a conclusion to a little bit more philosophy at the end, taking Rabbi Cooper's question. But a couple of facts. Any questions before going forward? Yes.
Right. But like another school
accepts
it. How widespread is that with
whole communities
of people where
right.
the women and the children.
Right. So essentially, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. That there are people that say, well, we don't accept the concept of Erevin. So the concept of an Erevin. So for somebody to say that person is a kofer. That person is a heretic. it's a tractate in the Shas. How could you say that it doesn't exist? There are many sages in the last 100 years or so that have looked at our cities, the way our cities are constructed, and said that doesn't really fit into the way the construct that the Rush or other Ravana were dealing with 1,000 years ago. Say, well, the idea of building an Erev in communities such as ours is founded on the fact that there aren't that many people that are living there, and today, to go to Manhattan, where there could be 20,000 people that live on one block, so there are sages that have said that perhaps Erevin shouldn't be constructed in such places. That doesn't fit into the way it was originally intended. So there are communities in a way where the members of the community can handle it, so to speak. Now there is a Flatbush Erev. There is an Erev. There are some believe in it. Some don't believe in it. So that's a constant rabbinic tension of how much can you push and without pushing too hard. So there are, Lakewood, New Jersey also does not have an Erev, or parts of Lakewood, New Jersey don't have an Erev. So why? So there, in a way, the community can handle it. That's the way people grew up. They kind of accepted that reality. And you know that going in. I think in communities outside of very strictly Orthodox areas where there's a variety of people, different shades of Orthodox and different shades of Jews that are all looking for this, so I think it's very hard to say, well, we're going to be tough here, we're not going to try. Okay?
Is that considered a job of
Yeah, the Mishnah Berurah says to rely on... All Irvin are built on a couple of leniencies, as I mentioned before. So the Mishnah Berurah actually does mention, by the Chafetz Chaim, mentions that that a Yirei Shemayim perhaps shouldn't rely on an Irv that's using certain leniencies, which is what some people say. Okay, well, I'm going to be strict. But I always point out that every stringency has a leniency attached to it. So a person to say, it's very easy for the man to say, I'm not, you know, my family's not going to hold of Erev. Meanwhile, he could still go to shul on Shabbos, and he could still go to the Kiddush, and he could still do whatever he wants. And meanwhile, his wife is stuck home with the 7 kids, all under the age of 10. Right, so that's a difficult use of that. I mean, that's a lenient, meaning it's very nice you want to be strict in the laws of Shabbos, but you're also being lenient in some of the laws of Shalom Bayis. So every leniency, it works in both directions. That's also, it's very important with every stringency that a person ever wants to take upon themselves, you always have to keep in mind what the other, what the ramifications are there, sometimes in the area of ben adam l'chavero, between man and man. Okay? So just three little sections that are found in Shulchan Aruch that I think really will allow you to understand pretty much the entire construct of our era. As you mentioned, there's 4 rishuyos on Shabbos. There's 4 areas on Shabbos. Rishus hayachid, rishus harabim. There's a private domain and a public domain. There is a karmelis, which means neither one. It's not public, it's not private. Technically, our whole area, Remington, Lancaster, Haverford, all these areas are technically considered, this area is technically considered a karmelis. It's not a public domain for several reasons. The fact that it's a public domain allows us to use the Eruv. There aren't very many public domains in the world at all today. For it to be really a public domain, there has to be... there's about 5 or 6 qualifications that are required, which are very difficult to find, especially in modern cities. In fact, in modern cities have made it less likely for it to be a biblical public domain, according to most authorities. Now, some disagree, which is why Flatbush and some parts of Manhattan and Lakewood don't have Eruvs. Okay, so there's a Karmelis. Makom Petur. Makom Petur we're not going to get into. Okay. So Ezehu Rishus Hayachid. What is a private domain? Makom Hamukaf Mechitzos Gavoa Asara Tvachim. An area that is surrounded by walls of 10 Tvachim. V'yeshbo Dalit Tvachim Al Dalit Tvachim O Yosef. And they have to be 4 Tvachim by four tefachim. So it has to be 10 tefachim high, which is about this high, or so 34-35 inches is the measurement that we use. So the lowest amount that a wall could be is that issue. Mark, where's Mark? Mark S. Mark Solomon called me on, sorry, he said, Oyvei, because of the snow, some of our walls are now a little bit less than 36 inches. So does the snow raise the level of the ground, right? That's the question that we had last week. So that's okay. That we don't assume, especially because you could stand there and you'll pretty much hit the floor right away. So the snow doesn't count, but if someone would pile dirt there, so that would raise the ground level, obviously. And that actually had some application someplace else in our area. So what else? V'yesh medal tachav dal tacham yosef. V'chein charitz amuk asara v'rachav arbar al arbar. So too, if it is a ditch. So if you have a hill going down. So that we have several places in our Erev also. Most of the use of the railroad as one of the walls of our Erev. So most of the railroad, if you go on the septa, you'll notice that most of the Erev is pretty steep embankments on the side. So our Erev goes up to that embankment and then ends there. So we don't have to put a physical barrier there. That the fact that it goes down right after that counts as our Erev. Okay? And then finally also a wall, the chain tail gavo, also if you have a cliff, that's 10 amos high, 10 tefachim high, excuse me, about 36 inches, as long as it's a certain incline, so that also counts as an Erev. In fact, the Lower Merion Erev uses the same, what we consider a ditch going down from the Lower Merion side looking at the railroad, for them is a mountain, right? So the same. So it's connected in a few places, yeah. It's connected in the mainline Erev guide that we just printed a half hour ago. There's a couple of it lists the 5 places that it's connected. What? Yeah, there are certain areas that one can cross, right? Okay. So that's limitation, not limitation, but those are rules number 1. So that it has to be surrounded by, well, the walls have to be 10 tefachim high. right? And how we define those walls are these three different ways. Either there's a physical wall, or there's a natural barrier that goes up 10 tefachim, or there's a something that goes down 10 tefachim. We'll interpret 10 tefachim as being 33, 34, 35 inches. Okay? So that's number one. Now the problem is that anybody's going to have a problem like this. Most cities, although you want to surround it by a wall in its entirety, if you surround the wall with if you surround a city entirely in a wall, what kind of problem are you going to have? What? No one's going to get in and out, right? So we looked at this problem. And said, you're right. It can't be that walls are allowed to have doorways, right? That makes sense.
Well, there has to be some doorway to get in and out.
Right. So walls are supposed to have doors. So what is the limit? How many doorways are you allowed to have in a city for it to still be considered connected? So we'll say unlimited. You're allowed to have as many doorways as you want. So so what does the doorway consist of? Doorway consists of something that's supposed to look like a door. And that's the next source. That if im asat suras hapesach, so if you make something in the shape of a doorway, so that continues the wall. Afil lepirsa yoser mi yaser mi eser. Doesn't matter how long that doorway is. The doorway could be, could be this wide. It could be from here all the way to Lancaster Avenue. Right? It could be as long as you want. In Phoenix, I think we had one. We used the telephone wires. We had one that went a half a mile, right? That we're allowed to do. In fact, in ours, we have a couple that are pretty long as well, size of a couple football fields. Right? It's unlimited the amount, the size that a doorway is permitted to be. So and then he adds in v'afil lo na'atz ela arba kundasin be'arba ruchos v'asat suras ha'pesach ha'gavei and mutter. And even if you only set up four poles in the four corners of your area. Right, so if I want to make a square Eruv, it doesn't matter how large the area is. I technically, if I could figure out a way of engineering this, I could technically set up a post in each of the four corners of the area. It doesn't even need to be four corners. It could be three corners. Right? Two corners would be a little difficult. But you can set up in four corners. And it says that's enough. Right, you have a corner. Each corner, you have a wire, a post that goes on top of it. It doesn't matter how long it is. Right, there you go. You have your Eruv. When people go camping, right, and they want to be able to carry around that area, so that's what we do. That's what I tell people to do. You put up four posts around whatever area you think is going to be usable or you're going to need over the course of the Sabbath. And there you go. You have your Eruv. In areas where they don't have. In areas where they don't have a citywide Eruv, and they need, so there are times when they have to carry outside, namely Sukkos, right, the holiday of Sukkos, so they have their Sukkos usually some distance from the house. How do you carry food from your house to your Sukkah? So you set up a little Eruv around your house, that's what he's talking about. You set up four posts. So v'hani mili b'chatzir v'mavoy, that's enough. Okay. So that's the technical, that's the keystone of Pennsylvania. It's the keystone of Eruvin, this idea of a Tzuras HaPesach, that you have these posts and a wire that goes on top of them. Now a wire has to actually go on top of them, otherwise it won't work. Oh, that's the next sip. So Mahu Tzuras HaPesach, what is this doorway that we keep talking about? So kana mikan, v'kana mikan, v'kana al-gabeyim. There's a pole here and a pole there, and then a pole that goes on top. Now, how big do these poles have to be? There's no minimum. It just has to be a pole. It has to be something that you could see. So we'll use a pole, whatever the pole is, and the pole on top of it will make it very little. What's something that's very little that we could use as a pole on top? A string! Right, so that's our pole that goes on top. It's a string. Afilu einu nogeya behen el sheish b'neim kama amos. And then he adds in another very important halacha: the string doesn't even have to touch the top of the poles. Even if there is a distance between the top of the pole and the string, uvavache yehei gova hakanim shemikan umikan yud tfachim. All right, as long as the height of the pole is 10 of these hand breadths, which is again a 35 inches or so. V'yumichuvan and keneged kana elyon. As long as the string is going directly on top of the pole, so you have your a good eruv, right? As long as there's nothing in between that's blocking it, so then you are still okay. All right, so, oh my goodness, we're running a little low on time. So I just wanted to take you around town a little bit at our Erev. Everybody, I'm sorry, I'm in the way, so that's going to not work so well. Let me sit over here. Okay, everybody could see, is this all right? Okay, so here we go, the corner of Lancaster and Church. So the truth is, you really can't see it here. There is a wire, oh gosh, I'm sorry. There is a wire that goes across Lancaster Avenue. You can see it?
I think so.
Wow. You really can't see it. You can see the one coming here into this pole. And then from this pole all the way across the street there, so there's a string that goes, next time you're driving in that area right across from the Nissan dealership, you look up, you'll see a wire there. You wonder what that wire is doing there. That's one of the borders of our Erev. Next one, the church. Little would anybody suspect that goes into that church that there is a very skinny wire that goes right in front of it. Right in front. You can actually see the, I don't know about you, Rabbi Cooper, but I told my shul I don't want to be buried on the lawn of my of the shul. But that's what the thought of it. but as you take a look there, right on top there is a string. Yes, all this stuff is done in accordance with several different local authorities. In that Erev booklet that I gave out, I think I put in a little bit of a description there that many different, you have to talk to the electric companies and you have to talk to the city. And in fact, it's a law, you have to actually purchase it, you have to purchase the space from the city. In fact, if you look in the issue that's going on in the Hamptons, the city's blocking it because they're saying, well, we're not going to sell you the space. Right, so there's actually a requirement, and we have a contract that we buy for the purpose of Shabbos the space underneath the wire for the next I think it's 50 years, you know, for a dollar. Here's our dollar, and for the next 50 years we own the spots right underneath the wire. Okay, next. Right, so the next real estate's too expensive there. They won't sell it for a dollar. Right. Please work. Oh. Go back down. Oh, there we go. Okay. So, as we talk about here, so here, here's the corner of, I think, city, county line, right, county line in Haverford, county line in Haverford meet. So if you look, right next to it, it says Delaware County in Haverford, right, there's a pole that goes right up that string there. This is the top of that, so there's a string that comes in here and curves to go along Haverford. Right across here, there's a string that goes along the Karakung Creek. Now, it's not so simple to just string something right through a forest. Anybody can tell me why? What would be the problem? Because the branches will nudge it out of the way, right? The one restriction that we have with the kana al gabein, with the wire that goes on top, is that it has to go straight from one to the other, right? A doorway does not have the top thing go back and forth, right? It has to look like a doorway in that it goes straight from one pole to the other. So going through a forest is sometimes a difficult thing. All right, heading in by Manoah Road, at the bottom of Manoah, by where Karakung crosses into Manoah, across Manoah. So it goes through the forest there. Actually put on our Erev checking guide that we made up. Look out as you're walking, because the wire actually goes right above. There's a creek down there, and we don't have enough insurance to cover that. Someone falls in there. Oh, we've got a steep hill to climb up that we got to do, which is a lot of fun in the snow. Ah, trouble by Cowell Road. So Mark Solomon and I were checking one Thursday. And we get to this corner by Carroll Road. I'm not sure we know where it is. Carroll Road in Farwood. And we see a lot of construction going on there. Construction things in Erev, they don't mix. we don't get along. So here we walked in and we see our string is down. And we're looking around for somebody to talk to. It was probably during their lunch break. And we're looking around, and oh man, because the ear was down, it was probably chewed up into a thing of mulch already. And somebody comes out and says, "Hey, you guys here checking the ear?" And I said, "Well, what gave you that impression?" And he said, "Well, you're wearing a tie." All right. I said, "Well, what's going on here?" And he told me, "Well, there's a creek down there. It's covered in the snow, but they're doing this whole project to redirect the creek, and they had to take down a couple of trees. And we saw your Aver, but what are we supposed to do? We have to do our job. We figured you'd be coming along Thursday or Friday, and we'd let you know what happened at that point." So I asked, "So how long are you going to be doing this for?" Whatever. So ended up happening is that we actually had a port every week. We'd put it up and then take it down again. Put it back up and take it down again. That's what we did for about 2-3 months. Now the construction's done, we're taken care of. But I asked this fellow, I said, "Well, where are you from? Do you remember where he was from, Mark? Is someplace Erie? That's far." There aren't too many Jews around Erie. So I asked him, how'd you know that it was an Erev? He said, "Oh, we run into this all the time." Okay. So, it took a little picture. So what did we do? So the first week we gathered up our string and put it to the side, and then it took us an hour the next week to untangle it. So we did, you might see in my hand there, I have a little stick that we would find. We pick up a stick and wrap it around the stick. So those are some of our important Erev tools that we... Don't go checking without it. We a lot of Arabs use fishing wire. We actually don't use fishing wire. I remember we have a professional person that we use. His name is Rabbi Shmuelam. He's a big tzad. He's a wonderful person. He's actually writing a book on how to checking Arabs. So he told me this is better. Whatever we use is better. I'm not sure what we use, but it's better. So the next week, actually this is because of the snow, when the first blizzard, so we came through the check in the back of Carroll Road, and we saw that the wire went down, and that's a problem. What happened was the pole that the tree is attached to, so the tree fell down. That's the tree that's fallen over here. That is our former Erev tree, and which is a problem. I used to tell all the trees that we would bang poles into that it's a simon, it's a sign for have a long life. And now we can't do it anymore. But instead, so we have to adjust the string to go to this string, and then from this string it goes. There's a gate that you can't. I'm sorry, you can't really see it, but there's a gate that goes along the back of this person's property. That person was contacted. The person was told that we're going to attach this pole. You can see the pole here. String that goes to that person's wall and then continues on along that wall until, and it comes out by that children's dentist office on City Avenue. Okay? Goes along there and then crosses over to City, and you can see on every pole along City Avenue, you'll see that there is a little one of our lechis. One of our poles is actually on that pole. You'll know that. And then, until you get to Sears, it goes up along the side of the parking lot at Sears. And actually, the building, the Sears building, is actually part of our Erev. And in the back of the Sears building, there's a pole up there, and you can see, you can't see, but from the top of this pole in the back of Sears, there's a wire that goes up into Overbrook Park. Okay? Overbrook Park. We have a wire that goes into Morris Park. This is why you can see the wire on top over here. You can't see it, but on top into Morris Park, there's a spring there. Here's a nice view of a lechi with two wires. There's a wire that goes into here, and a wire that continues on. I'm not sure if we'd be able to get away with this in the main line, but over the park, there is a string that goes to this person's house. to the corner here. Now they know it's there. That's okay. The problem is we have no way of attaching it. Remember, the string has to go on top of something. It can't just go into something. It's got to go on top of something. So what do we have it go on top? So remember the other law that we talked about was that whatever is going on top of doesn't actually have to hit the wire. It just has to be underneath it. So we put a little post here. This is a little fiberglass post that we have. It catches the wire on top. It continues along this gate into this house and continues on until you get to here. There's a pole on front of someone. There's someone that lives in this house that uses our eruv. So the pole right over here that continues, that goes back onto the onto the road. Here's our cutest Tzuras HaPesach, our cutest thing, that there's a gate that comes here and a gate that continues on. There's a wire, a little wire that connects these two right up there. Here's another one. There's a very, from here to here, is another one of our two smallest Tzuras HaPesachs, our two smallest doorways. And then ending at City. Can't really see here, but that's the bridge that goes over the railroad at City Avenue. So again, there's a wire that goes right here. At the end of that bridge, there's like a big thing at the end of that bridge. So that thing also counts as our lechi, right? And a wire goes directly on top of that. It then hits the railroad and continues on with the railroad all the way around till you get back to that Toyota dealership that we started the presentation with. Yes? Yeah, so, right. So that's why we daven very hard during the week. That no strings come down, but strings do. Pretty much almost on a weekly basis, probably around 80% of the time, there'll be something down over the course of over the area. So in the guide here, I actually put a paragraph. There's a big dispute, which I'm still working out, that if the Erev, if someone sees it on Shabbos that the Erev is down, that's a problem. For that person, there's two questions. A, for him, what?
Yeah, what decision does someone make?
Right. So for him, it's a problem. Is that what he? For him, the Erev is down. And the question is, should he tell other people that it's down? Which is also a significant question. It's I think beyond the scope of our time here to get into that.
Right.
If a single wire is down, pretty much. Now we do have some stringencies that we have in our eruv that technically, if some of them didn't exist, it could still possibly be up. We have some. That's why. Let's find out first, and then we'll discuss it later. Yes.
Why wouldn't such an eruv be essentially two concentric series of wires? Because since one wire down nullifies the whole thing, because the entire enclosure now is a break. If you have two concentric enclosures,
right? The answer is, it's very expensive. That would cost twice as much money. It would be. I don't know what the number that originally constructed the eruv. Putting up one is a very technical process that I give much praise to my predecessor for taking care of, which I would not have the patience to get it done. But getting one up is hard enough. Getting two up is more difficult. Yeah. What we're doing is that we're constructing this border around an area to make it all, in a way, a private area. Right? So now we're all friends. In a way, we're all now living together in one quote-unquote courtyard that's surrounded by an area. So other parts of your question, maybe we'll talk afterwards as well a little bit. I wanted to get a little bit past it. We can talk afterwards and get a little bit more of the background. Okay, yes? Both. In the Erev guide, a little bit of paragraph there. It's hard. Again, this was done before I got here. But it is built on where do people live that will need it. And there's some physical issues that we need to address. I mean, we do have some members that live on the other side, that live in Haverford, that live on the other side of the railroad. For us to construct the areas to go there would present some challenges. So, you know, they haven't required it yet, but you know, we'd have more members there, so then maybe we will invest the money. It's a
wanted to go down Simpson in Ardmore, and the Kremers were outside of that area, so it really just came down to kind of what could we feasibly do and who lived there, and
so we can't go this side of that.
Yes, that's right.
And neighbors of mine were just very intrigued to see this man who looked like a rabbi up on top of him. Why is the rabbi looking for people?
Yeah, he told me that rabbi, he happens to be a very a big expert in Arabs, but he doesn't want to, he told me, you're the one who decides for this one, you're the one in charge. He said, he has a French accent, he said, for some Arabs, I'm a rabbi, and for other Arabs, I'm a monkey. He said, so for some Arabs, I'm the rabbi, I'm the one that decides policy. In this Arab, I'm a monkey, I climb the trees for you, and you decide all the policy. I want to get into Rabbi Cooper's question. I think we're out of time, though. If you want to read the section here, Soloveitchik wrote a work entitled Halachic Man, where he discusses the idea of conceptual halacha versus practical halacha. So we build up the... What?
I wish you had done it first.
Now we build up the idea of we conceptually figure out what the ideal halacha is, and then we adapt it to the places and the situations that we are confronted with. So we might have an ideal about what a private domain should look like on Shabbos, but when it comes to building our Eruv in our area, so of course we practically adapt it to what the practical uses. So thank you very much for coming.
If I could just take a second. If you'll notice in the handout, there's a nonprofit organization called Take Off on the Word Eruv. Set up originally to create an Eruv in the Ardmore area, and we merged our efforts with Beth and Midrash to expand their Eruv. But we still collect money to support the Eruv, and I'd like to present you with a check for 2018 for $2,800.
Okay. Oh, thank you. We need it.
Thank you very much. And I have also I want to thank Rabbi Goldman being here. We have not had so much interplay, and I think that the Eruv is a wonderful example of how we can work together on something, on these things. But I've had a great opportunity to get to know Rabbi Gross. And I want to thank you for being here and for teaching us and enlightening all of us. And I hope we'll have more opportunities to study with you in the future. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for coming.